time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 113 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too. Don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house here in Bel Air, Maryland. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
This is Ethiopian.
It's strong and it's at night and we need some strong coffee to keep us going. Are you ready to sip some coffee and chat?
I am. But first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. This month, you can receive 30% off if you're a first-time buyer.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats.
Orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein. It's perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
This offer does not apply to subscriptions and cannot be combined with any other discounts.
It's a great time to try Grubly Farms if you haven't yet. Use the code CWTCL30 for 30% off your first purchase. Try it today.
Okay, so how are you doing?
Well, yourself?
Okay, I guess.
Your voice sounds better.
I'm feeling pretty good. I still have this little bit of a cough that just won't go away. But all in all, I'm feeling better. Just trying to get through the days.
Yeah, until spring is here.
Come on, spring. But we've had no snow, so
thank God.
I'm going to knock on lots of wood right now.
Yeah, don't jinx it. Don't jinx it.
So I've been saving up these chicken cookie cutters. I bought a set last year, and then this year I upgraded and bought a few additional cookie cutters. So I think this weekend I'm going to try to pull out all the chicken cookie cutters and make some chicken sugar cookies.
Oh, nice. That's fun.
It's like the post-Christmas, you're not supposed to be eating cookies, but I want to make chicken cookies, so.
I'm thinking spring, so I'm planting my garden. I've decided to put a lot more cotton in this year. The thing with cotton, though, is that in Maryland, because we don't have a long enough growing season, you have got to start it inside. So I'm going to have baby cotton plants all over my studio.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
It'll be happy, you know, like all the plants are starting. I have to start getting my herb seeds and starting all of them now in the house. And then when they're bigger, then I move them outside. This year, I am going to be doing even more outside around the chicken runs with herbs and marigolds. I want to do everything that they can eat in my big barrel planters. So marigolds, you pinch them off. I mean, you get them for months. They're perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so good for the chickens. So I figured I would just do that and do herbs all around it. So I got to start getting my seeds for my herbs.
That's nice. The chickens will love that.
Oh, yeah. They're going to really like it. So if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a written review. It does amazing things for the growth of our show. While you're there, hit that subscribe button because you never want to miss an episode, and it's also another great way to help us grow.
If you're looking for other ways to help support the podcast, you can visit our Etsy shop, check out the mugs and t-shirts we have there. You can become a patron of the show. Visit us at patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Check out our levels of membership. Thank you to our newest patrons.
Thank you!
And the other thing you can do to help support the show is visit our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah?
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tee for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tee. They are so cute and so soft.
In the November box, I absolutely love that glass rooster cutting board and the woven chicken tee towel.
I adore those Santa chicken hats and scarves, and I cannot wait to hang those chicken ornaments up on my chicken tree.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
Have you heard of Strong Animals Chicken Essentials? They make natural supplements for your flock.
Strong Animals has used plant-based products and natural approaches to promote the health and vitality of backyard flocks. Their products contain organic essential oils, prebiotics, and other natural ingredients to support the immune system and digestive health. Give your chicks and chickens what they need to thrive with Strong Animals health products. Visit GetStrongAnimals.com today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock.
Request a free catalog today.
It's time for the Breed Spotlight, yeah!
Yeah!
This week's Breed Spotlight is...
the Naked Neck, sometimes known as the Turkin.
Oh, we're branching out today. Yes, we are.
Yeah, they've been on our list for a while. They ended up having an interesting story and a lot of interesting things about them. So while I don't see them on my breed list anytime soon, if one came my way, I would keep her and love her, of course, or him.
Do you see them in your flock?
They're not a chicken that I would go out of my way to get, but if I ended up with one, I'd be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could say that about all the chickens. If we ended up with any certain breed, we'd be great, but it's not one that you're actively searching out to add to your flock.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. So the Naked Neck, also known as the Transylvanian Naked Neck or the Turkin, is an old breed that was developed in Hungary and Romania. Transylvania at one point belonged to Hungary. At modern day, it belongs to Romania. So we're going to say it was developed in the Hungary-Romania region. And then it was further refined in Germany and Austria in the late 18 and early 1900s. Now, this breed is a lot of things, but half turkey and half chicken is not one of them.
Let's clear up that myth right now, because I think a lot of people think that when they hear Turkin in the name, but it is not half of a turkey.
No, Turkins are 100% chicken. I found a column in a 1925 edition of the Poultry Tribune. The column was entitled The Fake Turkin, and it was essentially calling out farmers that were trying to make a quick buck selling the Naked Neck chickens as a turkey chicken cross. About 2 years ago, you and I had someone come up to us at a poultry swap and show us a turkin.
Yes.
That she said was half chicken and half turkey. This is almost 100 years after this Poultry Journal article. Old myths die hard.
They really do. It's just like somebody said it, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, okay, kind of like we were talking about the myth about acclimation from walking out of warm into cold causes chickens to pass away at that point. That's an old myth. There's no science to back it up.
Or my other favorite myth, which is moisture in a coop causes stage-free frostbite.
All myths.
All myths. Now, the naked necks do truly have a naked neck, but if you look at them, they're supposed to have a patch or a frill of feathers on their chest. According to the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection, naked necks are supposed to have less than half of the feathers of similarly sized standard breeds.
That's a lot less feathers, for sure.
It is. They do have feathers on the top and the back of their head, so it makes them look like they have hair.
It makes it look like they went to the barbershop and got a haircut.
They've got a do.
Yeah.
So despite their name, their neck is not the only naked spot. They're also featherless around their vent, poor things.
Oh my goodness, that's horrible.
Now, yeah, but naked butt doesn't sound as nice as a breed name.
I mean, their hind knees have to get cold in the wintertime, for Seriously. Sure.
Now, there are bantam naked necks. They were developed in Germany in the late 1800s, and they are still around in the show community. Chickens with featherless necks have been recorded in artwork, and they're supposed to have been around in parts of Asia for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Okay.
There's not a lot of documentation about them, though. Even 100 years ago, Lewis Wright is the only one of the modern poultry historians that we could find mentioning him.
Wow.
He essentially said that while they're not pretty, they are quite useful, and they're a good all-around chicken for anyone that's interested in them. He also noted there was a lot of variability in their appearance, and that needed to be standardized. They showed up in both the UK and the US in the early 20th century, but they, again, were not particularly popular. The USDA called them bare necks in an attempt to make the breed more desirable to farmers, but it really didn't work.
as you look at images of this bird, I feel bad for them because
I do too.
The feathers on the chicken serve many purposes for warmth, for protection, for everything else. And you think about like sunburn, everything to the skin, drying out. I feel so bad for them.
Yeah, a lot of the science that I read around them has theorized that that gene, it shows up in a couple of other big birds. It shows up in ostriches and emus.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory is that they don't have feathers around their vent and their neck simply to help them regulate their heat better.
Because they're supposed to be in a geographically a warmer area.
You'll see in a lot of places, people will say they're cold hardy. They're relatively cold hardy to a point. That is skin. It is not feathers.
And exactly.
They are definitely heat hardy. So what do they look like? The naked neck chicken is a large fowl bird with a red face, moderately sized straight comb. They have yellow legs in all of the colors, but the black has slate legs.
Right.
And they have long, broad bodies and a deep breast.
Yeah, they're like a taller bird for sure. They have the long legs. Roosters weighing about 8 to 8.5 pounds. And the hens are about 6 to 6.5 pounds. So I would say a little bit bigger than medium. There'll be a lot of bird to hold, that's for sure.
Yeah. The naked necks were accepted into the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection in 1965. And they can be shown in four colors.
The red, the white, the buff, and the black.
There are two more non-APA colors. These are accepted in the UK, but not here. They are blue and cuckoo or barred.
So I always put up images of the bird we're talking about. I have to be looking at the bird as I'm talking about the bird. And that's the one that I zoomed in on was the cuckoo or the barred. The one I'm looking at actually has a few feathers on their legs.
They're not supposed to. So that's not breed standard. That has some crossing somewhere along the line.
There are like the silky necks. They actually have like the showgirl dews on the top of their head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost like the fans that the showgirls hold up.
Yeah, and I did not look into the showgirls very deeply. I feel like they should have their own breed spotlight.
I agree.
When we talk about the genetics in just a bit here, birds like the showgirl will make more sense to you. So back in episode 103, we talked about the genetics of the Erminette chicken and the work of Cornell University professor F.B. Hutt.
Right.
Dr. Hutt very conveniently discovered the naked neck gene as well. It's a dominant gene, and it will show up in pretty much any cross that you create with a naked neck chicken.
We were joking about this the other day when we were like, well, the hen cannot say I went somewhere else and did something with somebody else except for the naked neck guy, because that dominant gene will be coming through.
It's showing up in the babies. So we knew the naked neck gene, which is NA, we knew that this existed. But there was further research in 2011. And they discovered that the presence of the naked neck gene causes overproduction of BMP12. This is a molecule that blocks feather development in the neck and the vent areas. So now they know the mechanism by which it works.
Exactly. It's pretty interesting stuff. I think every chicken's adorable. I think they're cute. I just feel bad for them. I'm just I got to get past that part of it.
What I discovered doing this research is that there's all kinds of studies that have been done on this chicken, and a lot of them are very recent.
Okay.
So according to a 2021 study, the same gene that causes the naked neck also causes an enhanced immune system, and it also may contribute to better eggs and a larger breast on the bird. This doesn't bear out the theory, but I thought this was funny. I did find a study testing the egg frequency and quality of the leghorns and the naked necks, and guess who won?
Naked necks.
No, nothing beats a leghorn. There are also several studies looking at the heat dissipating properties expressed by the naked gene. And researchers have been looking at crossing the naked neck with native poultry in several tropical regions of the world in order to create more standard sized heat hardy birds.
Okay. Are we talking chickens or other poultry?
No, chickens. So we'll link to the studies on PubMed in the show notes so you can go and see there are tons and tons of studies on this. Now, there's currently a large body of research on the naked neck, including from the USDA, trying to create the next super chicken by crossing them with other breeds. This next bit I'm very conflicted about. So in 2020, the USDA approved a new label. It is for a healthier chicken, and this was awarded to a poultry producer using a three-way cross. Naked neck, Delaware, and a secret proprietary breed. So they've crossed these three birds. And the USDA has granted this label that this is a healthier chicken than most industrial chickens.
I just have to say, why? Just why?
I'm disturbed on a lot of fronts, but
me too.
The Delaware I love and the naked necks are so sweet, and I'm just conflicted. I have a lot of feelings about this.
Everyone knows where we stand on heritage breeds. There's a reason why these breeds have come along. And then when you mess with the genetics, it's almost making something like a Frankenstein breed. And why do we need to do that? We have all these beautiful breeds out there already.
The hybrids, the poor hybrids, they're these sweet birds. They lay their brains out and then get reproductive cancer. It's horrible. But I will say this, in this case, the farmer is named Blake Evans, and he at least keeps the birds in somewhat better conditions. So in a standard poultry building, he only has 1/3 the usual amount of birds, and they are free to forage all day.
Oh, that's nice.
It's a step in the right direction. Again, like I said, I have a lot of feelings about this.
I do too.
And there's a lot about this that we don't know. I don't know if what they're creating is a hybrid where you have to have the same parent stock or if it's a new breed. I don't know.
And they're saying that it's a healthier chicken so that it will stay healthier in its life.
It's a healthier chicken to eat is what I've gathered. So like I said, I'm conflicted, but the scientists are going all out on the naked neck right now. And I thought, you know, we really need to tell people what's going on.
Yeah. So let's move on. These birds are actually good layers, and they are good layers of large brown eggs, and they're going to give you 3 to 4 per week, and they don't go broody. So if you're not looking for a broody hen, this is a good bird to have out there.
I thought this was kind of cute. The chicks are very easy to identify when they hatch because they are born without neck and vent feathers.
That is so cute.
Yeah.
I got to look them up now.
Okay.
As we're sitting here, let's see. Oh, yeah, they're cute. They got the do.
Look at that. Oh, my God. I would carry it around in my pocket all day. It's so cute. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're also very calm and very friendly. They make very good pets and unusual showbirds if you're looking to get a showbird.
Yeah, I mean, that with their ability to lay lots of eggs, so 3 to 4 per week, they make a really good pet chicken for you.
They do.
I mean, they're going to take extra provisions in the winter, for sure, if you're in a colder area.
Yeah, they can tolerate some cooler temperatures, but they are definitely more on the heat-hardy side. And they have the reputation for good health and disease resistance, which is probably thanks to the naked neck gene.
Yeah.
They're very good foragers, and they can be used as a dual-purpose homestead breed. By all accounts, this is a very, very sweet chicken, just lovely to have around.
Yeah, they're unusual. If you're going for, you know, you want a chicken that's a little different, this may be your chicken. They're going to be an easy to love chicken because they're known to be so friendly. You're going to get lots of eggs. The one thing that I can say is you may not want to be in an area that's going to go 10 below, you know, out in the Midwest somewhere and have this chicken because there's no feathers there. Skin is skin. If it's exposed to the elements, there's going to need to be some sort of protection for this chicken. I would say that you have to be in a warmer climate to have these chickens, for sure.
Be in a warmer climate or make provisions for them. I didn't find any people saying, you know, I keep this in the wilds of Nova Scotia. Almost everything I found about them were in warm weather climates.
If you're in a cold area, you're going to have a spare bedroom for your naked necks.
Oh, the naked neck bedroom.
For when it's super cold.
Yes.
They'll be like, yes, we need to come in. And remember, because they don't have vet feathers also, that's another area where they're going to have some skin exposure. And
that's some cold booty.
That's some cold booty right there.
Cold booty, yeah.
So look them up. They're really cute. And give them a try if you're looking for a way different breed out there. Mm-hmm. We should tell everybody where they can find the naked neck.
Murray McMurray Hatchery does keep a line of naked necks.
Yeah.
Now, they do have a new line of white naked necks, which are actually quite pretty. But for the rest of the colors, they don't keep separate colors. So you can end up with lots of different colors and feather patterns with the naked necks from McMurray.
It's our old favorite, the grab bag. If you order naked necks, you don't know what you're going to get.
Right. And I've seen some of the pattern ones, and they're actually quite pretty. The other place you can go, especially if you're looking for specific colors to show, there is a National Naked Neck Breeder Society. They have a Facebook page. They're another good source for eggs, chicks, and grow outs. It's a small but dedicated club. And among other things, they're working to get a blue variety into the standard of perfection.
Oh, that would be really cute.
They also made a small but impressive showing at the Ohio Nationals this year.
Nice.
So that's the very sweet and surprisingly endearing naked neck chicken.
If you have naked necks, send us your pictures. We'd love to give you a story on our Instagram. We would love to see your babies. You make our day. So send us pictures of your chickens. We would love to see them.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Amazon.com or Nestera.us.
Use our code CWTCLP10 for 10% off. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, take a look at Roosty's store on Amazon.com.
We've personally tested their products and we're huge fans. They have their famous nesting pads, those fantastic chick water and feeder kits, do-it-yourself port feeder kits, water or nipple and water or cup kits.
And you don't even need to drive to the stores. They're all available for prime delivery on Amazon.com.
Visit Amazon.com and check out the Roosty's range or follow the link in our show notes.
Okay, so let's move on to main topic. Yeah. This week, we're going across the pond to have
coffee with Fiona. Yeah.
We are back this month for our roundtable with Fiona. Welcome back, Fiona. How are you doing? How were your holidays?
Really lovely, actually. It was really quiet. It was the first time in many, many years. It was just Hugh and I, and it was lovely. Quiet is the best way of putting it. We did our own stuff in our own time. We had Christmas dinner when we had it ready and not to a timetable. It was amazing. It was fantastic. And it's probably the last time we're going to be able to do that for a long time. So, yeah.
That's so nice.
What about you guys?
It was good. We had some sickness on my brother's end. So it was very quiet over here also.
It was pretty quiet on my side. We went and visited local family. And other than that, we just had a really quiet time. And I made a lot of cookies and we ate a lot of cookies.
That's always the best.
And where are my cookies?
They're sitting in customs.
Well, we had Royal Mail strikes, which are like your US post. And there's been nothing delivered on time over the entire Christmas period. So they probably are still in a sorting area somewhere waiting to come to me. Yeah, so it's not that you haven't sent them.
Right.
Exactly. They're just with Royal Mail.
They are. Exactly.
This month's roundtable, this is a listener's request. Someone emailed us and we like to get into listener's requests because we can give you the information that you need now rather than having to look for it later. So we're going to talk about hatching eggs in an incubator.
Which might be a bizarre thing to ask me because I've got broody hens normally, but I have lots of incubators too.
You'll explain that a little more, but the reality is anytime you have a broody hen on a clutch, best practice is to have an incubator running as well, just in case something goes wrong.
Yeah, because so much could go wrong. 9 times out of 10, the hen has hatched a lot of the brood and then leaves the nest and wants to take those early hatchlings out to find food. Even though you've got food in the coop, they still get up and walk off the nest and you've still got some chicks trying to hatch. So best thing for them is to have an incubator on hand.
So I think the first thing that we should start talking about is hatching eggs, because that's where we have to start with this.
Yeah.
Where and how is the best place to get them and, you know, picking breeds and different things like that?
If you're going to have hatching eggs, you are going to get cockerels. And so we can't overestimate how important it is if you're going to hatch from eggs to have a rooster plan in place.
I can't tell you how many people contact me actually and they're surprised that they've got cockerels, which are actually hatched from the eggs. So it's a really common thing. It's not anything to be embarrassed about. There are so many people make that mistake. So it's nothing to be embarrassed about. But if you know it's going to happen, have a plan. If you've got two eggs, one of them is going to be a cockerel.
And chances are you're going to have more of them than the hens.
Right.
So knowing what you're going to do with the next step is so important for that animal and for yourself. Just have that rooster plan, cockerel plan in place. It makes life a lot easier down the road.
Our experience has been on average, it's been 50-50. We've had some years where we've had a lot more cockerels. We've had some years we've had more hens. Do you remember the old English pheasant fowl I had? When we hatched them, we hatched 10. 8 of them were hens. 2 cockerels.
Wow.
I know.
That's
we've
amazing.
Never had another clutch like that. That is not normal. I don't want anyone to think that that's normal. This last year, we had slightly more cockerels than hens, but the year before, we had slightly more hens than cockerels.
My Nanking clutches have always run 60-40. For every 10, you've got 6 boys and 4 hens. That's just the way they run.
But it could be breeds. It could be down to all sorts of factors. It could well be the breeds. I mean, I'm just talking about my Orpingtons, my beloved little fluffy things.
The rooster plan, if you're a new listener, just FYI, in the show notes, we will have some links to all of our previous episodes where we talk about roosters and rooster plans. The rooster plan is knowing in advance what you're going to do if you hatch roosters and you cannot keep them. It is having a home for them, making provisions for them. In some places, you choose to make them your table birds. But whatever you're going to do, have a plan in place.
I've heard people say they drop them off behind the Home Depot. That is so irresponsible of someone to do.
It's inhumane. And frankly, it's just beyond disgusting. So rooster plan in place. And now back to the eggs.
Well, you've got a choice. You can either create your own eggs, so have your rooster with your hens, or you can buy the fertilized eggs in. But the one thing I would say about the downsides of the two, actually, it's more than one thing, isn't it? Because there's a downside on creating your own, because you've got your rooster, clearly noise in a lot of places, you're not allowed to have them, but you've got control of all the genetics. So that's a huge advantage. But on the other side, if you're going to buy eggs in, there is a risk that your eggs are going to be damaged in transit and they could be shaken and shuggled, and that can actually reduce their likelihood of hatching, which is a real problem. And you don't get to control those genetics. It's the person you're buying from is picking the individual eggs. You don't get to see 9 times out of 10 the rooster or the hens that have come from, unless you can actually go and pick the eggs yourself, which is not normal. It may be that you can find a local advert of someone who says, come along, we have fertilized eggs, come and collect them. There are some places that do that, but 9 times out of 10, certainly the more normal thing in the UK is that you buy from long distance.
And here's the thing, we don't want them in the air travel because it affects that air sac in the egg and make them not fertile.
It's the negative air pressure that's the real problem. It can actually cause the air sac to expand and in some cases even explode. And the other thing is cargo holds don't have heating. So we're lovely and warm in our little passenger sections of the airplane, but the cargo hold has no heating at all because it's not worth it. And that means that it's incredibly cold down there. Now, if it's a short haul flight, it may not be a problem because you might be flying at a lower elevation potentially, or, you know, it's such a short journey that the cold doesn't affect the eggs. But certainly if they're going long haul, just don't even attempt it because you're not going to get eggs which are going to hatch.
There's no way that any breeder can guarantee a hatch rate for you. Because once the eggs leave the breeder, there are all these factors that can bring the hatch rate right down.
It's very normal for people to buy fertilized eggs for hatching here in the UK. And actually, every seller I know who advertises does say we can guarantee the fertility before they leave us. And a lot of us, myself included, we fertility test our cockerels and hens. So we will gather a number of eggs and then we will incubate them for 7 days and actually check the fertility rate, see what's actually started to grow. So we won't start selling until we can guarantee 95% fertility rates. And I know a lot of other breeders do that as well. But what you can't do is guarantee the hatch rate beyond that, because even if I have a 95% fertility rate, you're probably still going to get 70% hatch rate. And then, of course, you then overlay shaking and movement in transit to get to the new location, and it goes down even more. So it is a bit of a risk buying in from a distance, but you don't have the problem of having to have a rooster on your property with all of the noise and everything else that goes along with that.
So I guess the key is to stay local at that point, or as local as you can. Like you said, going to the farm that's down the street and saying, do you have hatching eggs? And then you're in charge of the transportation of them. It's like Holly Ann and I, when we went to go get the Nankins up in New Jersey, she got a dozen hatching eggs at the same time. We took very good care of them on the way home to make sure they weren't jiggling everywhere. And they were handed from one person to the other. So we felt very secure with those.
Mm-hmm. Is it something you can get hold of at your poultry swaps? Do people bring along fertilized eggs, or is it just chickens?
Poultry swaps are a big mix There are people with chicks. There are people with point of lay. There are people with hatching eggs.
Correct.
You can generally find a really wide variety. I'm still impressed that the first poultry swap we went to, someone was selling a breeding quartet of Egyptian Fayumis.
I know.
That is impressive.
Yeah. I still say that was the best bargain at that swap. And I still wonder if I should have bought them, but that's a whole other story.
It was a really good deal.
Well, that's probably because it was someone who doesn't like the personality of the Fayumi. They are an acquired taste. I adore them. I would say Egyptian Fayumis are not birds for the inexperienced chicken keeper. I'll say that.
Okay. So really high maintenance then.
Well, they're flighty in the truest sense of the word. I'll have one of the girls standing next to me, and if I startle her, she'll fly straight in the air. Straight in the air.
Wow.
So they are literally flighty, but they have a hilarious sense of humor. They're always doing something silly. I just really love them. And they're beautiful birds.
They are.
I think they would probably dominate my little orps, though. So
they tend to keep their picking to smaller breeds. They're in with my Jersey Giant girls, and they don't mess with them.
No, I just think that my orps would be walking around looking completely bemused, not knowing what to do, to be quite frank.
Probably.
I mean, they didn't know what to make of the old English pheasant fowl, for goodness sake. So I can only imagine what it would be like with
You could have Basil and Rosemary visit you for a few days. My Andalusians. That would be lots of fun for the orpies.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. But no, thank you.
No.
Hey, Fiona, do you think you're ever going to get any faverolles?
No, because their egg color is too close
the
Orpingtons. So whatever other breeds we have, they've got to lay a different colored egg. Otherwise, okay. If we sell fertilized eggs to a buyer, we could be selling them some weird hybrid mix of Orpington and faverolles. And
no, it makes perfect sense. It really does. Yeah. Actually, it's a really good system. So you've selected your eggs, which we do advise you to do carefully. You know, try to do some background on the breeder. As we said in our episode 2 weeks ago, some vitamin and mineral deficiencies can be passed from the hen to her chick, and that can lead to eggs not hatching. So you want to do your homework, ask around for recommendations, read reviews of your breeder. And then your eggs have been shipped to you. You have them in hand. Where do you go from there?
What's next?
A decent incubator. Please, please, please do not make the mistake that I made when I first bought an incubator, which is buy one of these cheap ones from eBay or Amazon. They are really appalling. And let me tell you why. The one that we got arrived and it was advertised as having auto-turning. It would regulate the heat. It would regulate the humidity. Wonderful, you say. Then it turns up and the angle of turn on the automatic turning is incredibly shallow.
Oh, no.
So on a quality incubator, you're looking at an angle of turn of about 140 degrees. So really quite significant. The cheap ones have an angle of turn of less than 90 degrees.
Oh,
it's
man.
Not enough. And the angle of turn is really important because it prevents the chick as it forms inside from sticking to the outer shell. So it could give you lots and lots of problems when you get to the hatch point, unless you've got a really good angle of turn. Then you've got the heat. Now, regulating heat, great, except that it's not actually very good at it. So it's got an alarm which goes off every time that the heat goes a little bit too high or the heat goes a little bit too low. And if your room temperature that you're putting this thing in is not kind of a standard temperature. So if you have the heating on for only part of the day, the alarm goes off when your heating's off, or if the alarm's not going off when your heating is off, it will start going off when your heating's on because it's overheating. So it's really annoying.
Yeah.
And then you get the humidity. So it tells you that it regulates humidity. Can you see a theme that's coming on here?
Yes.
That I really love this incubator. So this thing turns up and it says, right, you need to program the relative humidity of your environment into this thing. And I'm looking at it going, if I knew how to do that, I wouldn't have bought an incubator which regulates humidity.
Exactly.
So we couldn't use the humidity regulator anyway, because I don't know how to measure relative humidity in my general environment. And if you do, wonderful. But even then, I'm not sure it would work properly. Mm-hmm. So buy a decent one.
So the number one thing to look at is, you said, the angle of turn. That's so important. So when you're looking at the specs of your incubators, you want to look for angle of turn and make sure it's at least what you said, 140 degree turn.
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
and that it's going to control its own humidity and the temperature and do a decent job. So when you're looking, look at reviews that are under the product and see how many people commented on them. It didn't do this the way it should. And the chances are you get what you pay for. If something's less expensive, there's a reason for it.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can get basic incubators which don't do the turning of the eggs. And, you know, you can choose to 2 or 3 times a day go in and turn the eggs manually. That's fine if you're prepared to do that every single day for 21 days. You can buy incubators which just give you alarms on the temperatures and don't actually do auto adjustment on the temperatures. And if you're happy to make adjustments yourself for the temperatures, just be prepared to do that. But it's best to know what you're getting into. And actually, it's very common for your incubator not to have auto humidity controls, right, but just to have humidity alarms. Now, I have to say that my first incubators, when I bought a decent one, and I've gone for Brinsey as a brand because I found them completely reliable, they just work.
Agreed.
They're absolutely amazing. But the first Brinseys I bought had auto turning and auto temperature, but didn't have auto humidity. They had humidity alarms. Since getting one with the automatic humidity, I am absolutely sold. I am not buying one without automatic humidity ever again. You get basically a little bit of pipe, which goes into a bottle of water. And when it needs water, it just sucks a little bit up and pops it into the incubator and it does it all for you. You don't even have to think about it.
So basically at that point, everything's in the hands of the machine and the incubator and you're kind of the watching eye that's watching it happen. It's less responsibility on the person that have to do the turning, the regulating of the humidity and run your normal life. You know, that's a little bit hard.
And they've even got this program on it now, which allows you to put a cooling down period. Because naturally, if you had a broody hen with your eggs, the broody hen would get off the nest once a day and go out and eat as much as she possibly can, drink as much as she possibly can, and evacuate her bowels. But she'll be off the eggs for, on average, about an hour. And you can program in that cool down period in the better incubators now. And it's just so you can almost do it like the natural way. It's fabulous. I love it.
I did that too. So when we were getting ready to buy an incubator, we looked at the Brinsey because your recommendation, and I've heard other people say they're pretty much top of the line. I've kept chickens for years and years and years, but we've never hatched. That's something new for us the past couple of years. We ordered the Brinsey Max 2 EX, took it out of the box. We had to set up the humidity pump and you have to program 4 optional things in there. The first is the temperature. It gives you the default and you can keep that. The second is the rate of humidity, which is generally about 45% during most of the hatching process.
And then you turn it right up for the hatching itself.
Yes. Then you put the cooling down period, which we absolutely did. I thought that was fantastic. We put that in there. Yep. And the last thing that you program in is the angle of turn, how often it turns the eggs. After listening to you, we put marks on each egg on both sides of the egg. That way you could check and see and make sure they were turning. It took me a couple of minutes to realize that my bantam eggs still had to go in the regular chicken egg turner. They did not turn in the quail egg tray, just FYI.
Right.
Okay, so I have a question I want to ask. On each side of the egg, did you use a different color of marker so that you could tell if it turned one side to the other?
You could do that, but because I'm a dork, I put 1A. And then the next egg was 2 and B, and the next egg was 3 and C. I wanted something to identify which egg was which, and then something to tell me that it was one side or the other. But you could use colors too. That would work just as well.
So just different marks. I just want to make sure everybody knows that you're not just marking it the same, 2 same marks on the egg. Mm-hmm. You have to label it so that you know it turned when it was supposed to and keep a log of when you started and where it should be on, because it's easy to forget or get caught up in something else and say, oh, shoot, which side should it be on right now if I'm checking?
On our eggs, we put numbers on the top and then a cross and a circle on the side. So we know that from the cross and the circle that it's turned.
That's a good idea too. Yeah. So once you have your eggs in, and honestly, with automatic incubators like the Brinsey, and I love the Maxi series, the smaller ones, because it's perfect for hobbyists who want to hatch. You don't have to fill the whole thing.
We've got the Mini, we've got the Maxi, and we've got Ovations as well.
And the Ovations and actually, fit a lot of eggs.
I love the Ovations. It has to be said, they are my favorite. because the smallest one we've got is a 28 egg size, which means we can put multiple clutches of eggs in at the same time, which is amazing. But at the moment for fertility testing, I've got 7 eggs in the mini because there's only 7 fits in there, and it's perfect.
That's great.
It really is great. If you get the set it and forget it models, then you can spend most of your time. I mean, you want to check things, obviously. You'll have your alarms to reassure you if something goes south.
Do you talk to your ex? Because I do.
Yes. And I was always over there. I knew nothing was happening for weeks, and I was still over there staring at him every single day, anytime I could.
Play. Every morning, it's, hello, chickies. Morning. Yes.
Play some classical music for them like you do the babies.
That's
like,
right.
So that they're nice and calm and they can hear it. And they come out cheeping a tune like, doo 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 doo.
Well, I realized today they don't like 30 Seconds to Mars, the chickens. I'm really sorry, Jared Leto, if you ever listen to this, but they really don't like 30 Seconds to Mars.
Nope.
Let's go on. The next step is we have our hatching eggs. We have a really nice incubator. I think we're in agreement. We all love Brincy. You can't go wrong with Brincy if you're going with an incubator. Hallie-Ann, you were saying there are some other brands. What do you have?
Harris Farm has an incubator. If you're doing large quantities, and I know we've talked to a couple of different breeders here who have said they've used the Sportsman.
Okay.
Those are very, very pricey, but again, they're for like multiple clutches of eggs. They're very large incubators.
But the thing is, with these incubators, where you're going for a really good brand that's got a good reputation, that's got fantastic reviews, you can normally sell them for not far off what you paid for them if incubating doesn't suit you. Whereas if you buy something which is cheap with a name which people don't know, you might as well just throw it away, quite frankly.
Right. True. And that's another good thing. If you want to try looking up a used incubator, then you want to go for a Brincy, or you were mentioning Arcom.
They've got a very good reputation as well. Yeah, Arcom's good.
I'm not sure they're in the US. I think they must be a UK or a Europe supplier. I have not found them. Most of the good incubators are not for small amounts of eggs. That's where the Brincy Mini and Maxi come in, because you can do smaller amounts of eggs in there. It's a lot more efficient.
And we're going to go into this in greater detail during our retail therapy at the end of the show, so we can help lead you in the right direction. The other thing is, we will put on our Amazon store the ones that we recommend the most. You don't even have to worry about looking where they are. Just go to our storefront and you can find the ones that we highly recommend. It'll be really easy for you.
So you go along merrily for the first couple of weeks. We do recommend candling your eggs at intervals to make sure the chicks are growing. You don't want to leave eggs in the incubator that have died. You don't want bacteria and off-gassing.
We candle definitely day 7 and day 14, but you get those where you're absolutely certain that they're not fertile and those which you're absolutely certain are fertile. And then you've got some in between where you think it is, but you're not quite sure. And normally what we found is that they were fertile and they've started to grow, and for whatever reason, they've stopped. But we always like to leave them in just for a couple of more days, just to be absolutely certain that's the case. So we will do extra candling in between the 7 and 14 days as well, just to be on the safe side. But yeah, as soon as we're certain it's not growing at the right rate, we'll just take it out.
And here's the reason you candle. Eggs are porous, so gases go in and out of the egg. So you don't want something that can spread bacteria to your other little chicks. So it's best to candle. That's an excellent point, Holly.
And then once you're sure all your eggs are growing and healthy, we get to day 19, and that's when you go into lockdown. That's when you stop candling eggs.
You take your egg trays out. You put your eggs on the hatching tray. The turning's turned off and they can just get ready. You might actually be able to hear them cheeping at that point, which is really exciting, because normally they start communicating with a hen at that point. And if you're lucky, you do hear the little cheeps going on, but probably not day 19, probably more likely on day 20. Right. But yeah, they're getting ready to hatch at that point. It's really exciting.
And then the most exciting thing is when you see the first pip.
Oh, yeah. Then you start to get frustrated about the ones which aren't pipping. And then there's the ones that are pipped and then they rest for 12 hours and you think, what's wrong? But they're fine. They're absolutely fine.
They're tired.
Fine. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. They do these things. I was a total helicopter egg mom.
We all are.
And we had just spent a lot of time going through the broody hen season for you. This is 2 springs ago. If you haven't listened to our Broody Reports with Fiona back for 2020, you do want to go back to those episodes and listen, because there's a lot of valuable information about both hatching with broodies and with an incubator. Because you had told me, look, sometimes they pip and it can take 12 hours. And you had warned us that sometimes there's one that's super, super slow and they may dry out. And we had one chick that did start to dry out. She had pipped, I want to say, 18 hours earlier. And we started to get concerned. And I don't have very steady hands. Pete does. So Pete actually manually, painstakingly peeled her egg and got her out. It was nerve-wracking for both of us.
It is so nerve-wracking because it's paper thin, that skin. And it's just, the likelihood of damaging them is really quite high. So you've got to be so patient. So good on you, Pete. Well done.
I just wanted to pipe in and make sure that everyone knows what pip means. Before chickens come out, they have a little egg tooth on the end of their beak, and they use it to cut through all the way around the egg. And that is called pipping.
You'll sometimes see people refer to it as unzipping. They'll pip the little hole, and then over time, they'll unzip the top of the egg.
Right.
And when they kick their way out of the egg, it's pretty thorough. You know, they get that egg open and they get out. Every now and again, you'll see a photo, say on social media, of a chick that's fluffy and dry walking around with an egg on its head. That does not happen.
No.
Never, ever, ever happens.
Does not happen.
And the other thing is, you also see these pictures of people with a giant, great big hole in the side of the egg. That's not how chicks get out of the egg either. It's very much like if you're taking the top off of a hard-boiled egg to actually get in to have your hard-boiled egg for your breakfast, that's kind of what they do. They do unzip that top. They do nibble around that top bit and then throw the top bit off and then kick the egg away from them. And they're this horrible, slimy, kind of wet little chick that looks so pathetic with a really bulbous tummy on them.
Here's another thing that you're going to see that doesn't happen. If a chick's under a broody mom, that broody mom is not going to stand up and watch that chick hatch. That broody mom's going to sit on the egg the entire time. Broody moms do not get up and look down at the chicks until way after they're born. They got to keep them warm because they're wet when they come out.
Yeah, they will only stop coming out when they've fluffed up. If you see a chick that's wet outside of the underside of a broody hen, something's wrong. Either she's rejected it, or there is this something very wrong going on with the behavior and you need to intervene and actually get that chick under a brooder, because the broody hen would not normally let a wet chick out at all. So intervene at that point, absolutely, please.
Yes.
That's a place, Fiona, where if you had an incubator running alongside, you could pop the baby into the incubator.
That was exactly the reason why we bought her first incubator. It actually wasn't for incubation. It was for the hatching process. And we've learned so much more since, because we do now extensively use incubators for incubation, but alongside the broody hens. Because, for example, our broody hens can sit on 12 eggs, but they can also very comfortably raise 12 chicks. Now, the likelihood of 12 eggs producing 12 chicks is actually quite small. You'll always have two which won't hatch. So we will normally, for every clutch, we'll put an extra 3 eggs in an incubator and run them alongside. And that means that the broody hen will have either 12 or 13 chicks. We know that a broody hen can actually comfortably cope with 15 chicks, but 15 is the absolute max. It's got to be cut off at 15. And if we put 3 extra eggs in, worst case scenario, she'll be at the absolute max. And Jelly Bean had that this year. Little Jelly Bean had 15 chicks, and she did an amazing job.
That's
fabulous
awesome.
Job. And she's one of our smaller Buffalo Pintons. I've got these great photos on Instagram of her with all these little faces underneath her at roosting time. And it's the cutest thing.
By the end, she's like, get these kids out of here. I need my own time.
You can actually see her at certain times. I mean, particularly when the coop opened up in the morning and all of the chicks came boiling out. You could see her kind of going, oh, and just kind of walking away.
Like, where's my coffee?
Yes.
So many kids. So once your chicks have pipped and hatched, you don't want to take them out of the incubator until they're dry. They need to be dry and fluffy.
Yes.
And at that point, you can put them in their preheated brooder.
There is another point to make as well, that while the hatching process is going on, if you do have chicks in there which have dried out, but you've still got eggs which are hatching, let the whole process carry on. those dried out chicks won't come to any harm wandering around inside the incubator, but the chicks which are still hatching need high humidity. And by opening up the incubator, you're reducing the humidity and you can actually make those eggs dry out. So it's actually a bad thing for the chicks which are still hatching. But yes, preheated brooders, have it ready, have your little brooder area all sorted out. And if you can avoid heat lamps, please do. Now, the only reason for that is that it's the light aspect. You basically got a light on constantly. And, you know, as chicken keepers, we know that chickens work on the circadian rhythms. They like to fall asleep when it gets dark and be all energetic when it's light. So to start life with a heat lamp on, it can be a problem for them.
However, if you are using a heat lamp, do not turn it off at night.
No, not at all.
If you start with a heat lamp, you need to stay with the heat lamp unless you're moving to another heat source.
Yes, but if you've got a choice of buying a heat lamp or a brooder plate, go for the brooder plate. But if a heat lamp's all you've got, it's not the worst thing in the world. The heat is the most important thing. Leave it on all the time.
Yeah, because they're tiny and their body temperature needs to be up. So without the broody mom, you are the broody mom at this point. So once they're dry and in their brooder, that's when you want to start making sure that they can eat. You introduce them to the water by dipping their little beaks in and then the food. And then you can hold and snuggle them and let them get used to your hands so that they know that you are friendly and not, you know, the monster hands coming to get me. So that's when you start. And you're taking that place of the broody mom. You're the mom.
Yeah, and they learn so quickly because the old English pheasant fowl, which we hatched for the first time ever, and it's never happened since, we had a broody hen who broke early in the process. So we actually had to hatch the old English pheasant fowl and raise them by hand. And very quickly, they would absolutely mob me as soon as I put my hand into the brooder area. They would be climbing all over me and they were desperate to be picked up and taken out. They absolutely loved it.
So in the US, we have that way more than the UK, because the UK, if you don't hatch your own, you're normally getting point of lay. But here you're getting the 1 to 2 day old chick. So that's what happens. Like, you're just with them at all times. And then they're like, mommy, you're my mommy. So I put food in my hands, let them jump in my hands in the heat and everything, and let them really get used to me that way. It's just so important so that you have that bond and you can be able to treat them if they have any health ailments and they're not afraid of you.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much easier at that age to make that bond than buying them at point of lay.
Yeah.
But it's not a thing here in the UK. There are some people who sell day-old chicks, but it's not common. It's not common at all.
It's just the difference between the UK and the US in chicken keeping. And that was one of the major differences. I can't believe that we've all known each other and been sitting at this virtual round table together for 2 years now.
Yeah, this is our third spring season working on chicks together.
And you're not sick of me yet. Wow.
We love you, Fiona. You are a dear friend. But that was one of the differences in that very first episode we made, the differences between the US and the UK in chicken keeping.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, it's interesting because more recently I've seen people advertising day-old chicks, but it's still not a common thing. But you do see some adverts out there now for people saying, I have day-old chicks, but it's always for collection. It's not the way that you do it where they're transported over distances. It's always come and collect your day-old chicks.
And honestly, the U.S. Postal Service has been doing this for over 100 years, and it's only like the last two or three that they've just made an absolute mess out of it.
I think you've had to do it that way, though, because you've got much wider expanse of land. Oh, we're a tiny little island. You could fit thousands of our place into your entire country.
Right. And really, if you're looking for particular breeds, it's kind of the way it has to go. You either accept what breeds you can get locally, or if you want specific breeds, you're almost always going to be getting them in through the mail.
Or hatching eggs.
Right. I suppose the other option is driving, but most of the time you're looking at a very, very long drive and you're transporting chicks home that need heat.
Yeah, that could be fun.
And let me tell you, when our chicks come, they come to Holly Ann's house. We're about 50 minutes apart.
50, not 15.
So when I drive there, we dress in layers. So basically by the end, the girls are like down to like a sports bra in the van because we got the heat on 95. We're like holding these chicks like dying in the van. They're like, I can't breathe. It's so hot. I'm like, but the chicks are comfortable. We got to keep the chicks comfortable. So
I never experienced that because, like you said, the chicks come to us. But this past year, remember Pete really wanted Barnevelders and you wanted a Barnevelder. Yeah. So we drove an hour down to Homewood Gardens and we got our Barnevelders. And here are Pete and I on the way home sitting in traffic on I-95. And we are just, it was like a sauna. And I looked at him and said, we're never doing this again.
I know.
I mean, it worked, but whoa.
It works. It keeps them warm. But can you imagine if you took an 8-hour drive to pick up your chicks and then you're driving 8 hours back with that 95 degrees in your car, man? That would be horrible.
It would be too much. But I mean, it's only a temporary thing anyway, isn't it? But actually, talking of that, I do remember I had contact a couple of years ago from somebody who had rescued a chick that they'd actually found that the broody hen had died and they rescued this chick. And they were asking advice on how to keep it alive. And they were using hot water bottles. And I was saying, no, broody plate, get a broody plate as quickly as you can. Borrow one, put an advert out there, stick something on Facebook. Someone will have one that you can use almost immediately. But things like heat pads, hot water bottles, stuff like that, it's not a solution for raising a chick.
No, that entire environment in the first few days has to be like 95 degrees. So it's not just them sitting on something. The whole air that they're in has to be that warm. And that's why you keep them in the incubator after they're born, because they're wet and cold is the enemy of the chick.
They're fine in the incubator because just like a chick that's been shipped, they consume the yolk before they hatched. So they have a good at least 48 hours worth of nutrition.
Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, by taking the lid off, you are exposing them to bacteria in the environment as well. And actually, they're very vulnerable at that stage because having absorbed the yolk, there's still a potential for them to take some bacteria into the same place. So they're actually better in that incubator for a little bit longer. And I mean, I don't know this to be true, but I suspect that's another reason why the broody hen doesn't let the chick out until it's fluffed up and it's dry and it's animated. It can actually walk.
Yeah, it's actually scary because you will see some kind of put on stuff on your social media. And that's scary for the chick that it's happening to.
Do you mean fakery?
I think fakery is a word that we've heard in the last few weeks. Fakery it is. But they sit on them to keep them at the utmost warmness.
We say lockdown with the incubator because it is literally lockdown. You're not opening that incubator until it's time. And it's sort of the same way with the hen. She keeps that baby under her feathers where they need to be, where they need to get warm and dry before that baby's going to be out. And like Fiona said, if you see a wet baby with a broody hen, that's a problem.
Yep. Okay. So Fiona, you came in with so many good points. We're hoping that this helps everybody out there that wants to use an incubator, knows what kind, what to look for, hatching eggs and everything. Thank you once again for coming on our roundtable. It wouldn't be the same without you every month.
Honestly, I really, really enjoy these.
It's so much fun.
Are we ever going to run out of subjects?
Never.
No.
Good.
Okay, so until next month, we'll see you later. Hope you have a good month.
You too. See you later. Bye.
We just want to thank Fiona one more time for coming on for the roundtable, having another great discussion with us. You can see Fiona's videos over on her YouTube channel, English Country Life.
So let's move on to...
Cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Okay, so this week's Cracking the Eggs, we're talking...
chocolate cherry scones.
Three of my favorite things. Chocolate, cherries, and scones.
Right. Exactly right.
It doesn't get much better than this.
No, these are delicious and perfect on a cold January morning.
With coffee, always. And if you make them in advance, always warm them a little bit. They go great with the coffee.
Yes.
We try to put some of our favorite ingredients together and make something that you could nibble on over coffee while you're talking chicken with your bestie. So we're going to need 3 cups of all-purpose flour or gluten-free flour. And it's usually 1-to-1 when you get your gluten-free flour. 1/4 to 1/2 cup of sugar. In the DiCarlo house, we're going with like 5 cups of sugar.
I made the range for us. Like the Casamalas are 1/4. The DiCarlos are 1/2.
We're 5 cups.
Okay. 5 cups of sugar.
Okay, 1 tablespoon of baking powder because you want a little rise, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 stick of butter or non-dairy butter, 1/2 cup of that, 3/4 cup of 1/2 and 1/2 or dairy-free 1/2 and 1/2, 1 large egg, some dried cherries, about 3/4 cup. And this you can kind of play with. 1 cup of dark chocolate chips, another thing you can play with. Ella would add like 3 cups of chocolate chips to the
I just scones. Empty the bag. If I'm being honest, I just empty the darn bag.
Ella made chocolate chip waffles the other day. Ooh. In the little mini waffle maker. And I had to say to her, now look, don't add as many as you normally do because it's just going to melt all in the waffle maker and you won't even be able to eat it. And then we're just going to do some coarse sanding sugar. You're going to put that on top. So go ahead, Holly. How are we going to make these?
You can either do a mixing bowl and a pastry blender, or you can do the food processor. I am too lazy to wash my food processor, so I'll go with the bowl. You will use the food processor.
I've done it both ways.
So whichever one you're using, you're going to add your dry ingredients. You're going to add your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, your salt. Then you're going to cut the butter into chunks and toss it in there. If you're using the pastry blender, you're going to cut it until it resembles coarse meal. If you're using the food processor, you're just going to pulse it until it looks like the same thing, coarse meal.
It also depends on your mood of the day. Like if you're really angry, the pastry cutter is like the way to go. You're like, yeah, you can get some anger out with that. Or if you're like, oh, I just want it easy, boom, 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 you know, go with the food processor.
It works just fine either way. So then you want another bowl and you're just going to whisk most of the half and half and the egg together. So they're nicely blended. You're going to keep a little of that half and half aside for glazing the top.
Mm-hmm.
Mix the egg in half and half in with the flour along with the chocolate and the cherries. You can use a wooden spoon or a fork, just, you know, until the dough comes together. It doesn't have to be right. Super well mixed. I usually save a few steps here. I put out my baking sheet. I put a piece of parchment paper on top of it, and aluminum foil will work in a pinch. Sprinkle a little bit of sugar, and then I turn the dough right out on that.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to pick them up and move them.
What I do is I turn them out right on the sheet, you know, like I said, with a little bit of flour, and I very lightly pat it into a round, however big I want, usually like 7 or 8 inches across.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will take a knife and I will score the sections.
Okay.
Then I will drizzle the leftover half and half and the coarse sugar. And that way I let them bake and then I cut them the rest of the way when they come out of the oven. You can do it the other way.
I've done it the other way where you put it out on a pastry board and you roll it a little bit. You make the disc. And then I went out and bought myself a pastry cutter just because I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
I have them too. I'm just lazy. I want it all right there. I'm just going to score it and I'll cut it when it comes out.
So I love using that pastry cutter. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm making the scones. I can get the pastry cutter out. So
the pastry cutter and the bench scraper is another one. I love those things. But for me, fewer steps wins every time.
Yeah. I like making them into the triangles and then getting them on the baking sheet. To me, the sugar on top makes them.
Yeah, that little bit of half and half. You can also use milk. I mean, I've done just plain old milk on top of them. Dairy free, of course.
Of course.
But yeah, the half and half mixture and then the coarse sugar on top. It comes out of the oven kind of sparkly, that little bit of crunch when you bite it.
Exactly. Keep in mind, when you make these scones, they're going to be dense. Scones are dense. They're not going to have a huge rise. So
you're just going to pop these in a 350 degree oven for like 20 or 25 minutes until the tops are lightly browned. And then enjoy them.
Sometimes you can also make a little glaze to put on top too, if you want to do that, even over the sugar.
That's going to take them up another sweetness notch.
Well, in the Dirk Harlow house, that's what we go for.
Okay.
So try them. Tell us what you think. Send us pictures. We'd love to see them.
Okay. So let's move on to retail therapy. Retail therapy.
Yeah.
This week in our roundtable, we talked to Fiona all about hatching eggs and hatching in incubators without a broody hen. So this week, we wanted to talk about incubators.
We're just going to give you some of the possibilities. The honest answer is we've never used anything but Brinzy.
That's it.
And had an amazing experience. The Maxi 2 series for home hatching, I think you can't beat them.
Right.
There's the Eco, there's the Advance, and then there is the EX. I got the EX because I wanted all the bells and whistles. I wanted the automatic humidity pump, and that was in the neighborhood of 300 and something.
You get what you pay for. So one of our listeners sent in a question to us. She didn't want to buy the really inexpensive one because she knows you get what you pay for, and there's got to be a middle of the line. But what happens is if you don't get all the bells and whistles, you're doing all that extra work yourself versus the machine's doing. So sometimes I think it's better to pay a little more and get a little more with this.
if you're busy and you don't have time to remember to turn the eggs at least twice a day, preferably more, if the humidity is uneven for whatever level, the temperature doesn't stay correct, it can lead to catastrophe for your hatch. And I think Fiona mentioned this earlier. The really nice thing about the Brinzies is that they do hold their value. You can pick up used Brinzies that are not full price and still operating amazingly. And if you have one and you said, well, the kids and I hatched eggs last year and we're probably not going to repeat that because we got too many cockerels, you can sell it on to the next person who needs it.
Yeah, and she was saying you can get a really good price for it if once you resell it. So
I've never seen the used ones hanging around. They are snapped up quickly.
Yeah, there's something to say about Brinzy being probably the top of the line when it comes to incubators and hatching for backyard chickens. And they are constantly innovating new different technology for their incubators. And like you said, all those bells and whistles, if you're a busy person, they are going to work for you. Now, we were talking about before, Harris Farms also comes out with an incubator. There are some incubators that are being sold over like a Tractor Supply. Again, you should go over there, read the packaging, see if it has what you want. I think the middle of the line is somewhere around $150 to $200 for an incubator. To me, that's the middle grade.
Right. Now, Harris Farms and Producers Pride, both are brands you'll probably find in your Tractor Supply if you're looking locally.
Right.
Both dependable name brands. Actually, a lot of the Producer's Pride stuff for chicks has impressed me lately with the quality.
Yeah, that's all Tractor Supply.
Mm-hmm. And the Harris Farms is a division of Matapro. So again, they know what they're doing. So it's really good stuff. Murray McMurray actually has a full line of incubators in their catalog. So there's the Pro Series. There is Full View Picture Window Incubators. They do sell the Brinzy Mini Advance 2. That's the middle of the road Brinzy. Let me check the price of that very quickly. It's $239 for that one. Yeah.
I was saying like $200 is probably middle of the road. You're not going to get everything, but you're going to get quite a bit.
Right. The other thing they sell at McMurray is a digital thermometer / hygrometer to read the humidity and the temperature. Not a bad thing to buy to pop into your incubator if you don't have a fully automatic one.
Exactly. So I've pulled up incubators for sale. I'm hitting the shopping because I want to see what somebody's going to look at when they're going to shop. Now, it's so weird because Amazon has fancier egg incubator for 6 eggs, $36. And then two down, you have Brinzy at $449. So that could be really hard for someone to see the difference. Why can I get this one for $36 and this is $450? That's what we explain with Fiona, all those bells and whistles.
Well, also the amount of chicks that can be hatched. The $450 Brinzy is the Ovation. And that is more for a breeder. I mean, you're not looking at hatching a dozen eggs in that. You're looking at multiple dozens of eggs in
exactly.
that.
You have to really, here's another one for $38, $39. You have to look what these incubators are actually going to do for you.
What they're going to do, what they come with. Some of these don't even turn automatically. So you have to start at the ground up and see, will they turn my eggs? Do they have a turning plate for the size of egg that I'm going to be hatching? Is it automatic or manual? Then you have to check how the humidity is maintained.
And the temperature.
And the temperature. Everything. Right on down the line. Some of these are completely manual. They don't have an automatic function at all. The best incubators, you are programming your temperature and your humidity level into them. So you want to check and see if that's something that's possible. If you are looking to go with a cheaper incubator. The incubating trays, which are like a corrugated cardboard tray. Before you go into lockdown, you need to put that in for your chicks to hatch on.
Right.
Look and see if they come with that or if you need to buy your own.
It's a big adventure that you're going to go on to do this. And keep in mind, you want to make sure you have what you need because it's not just a science experiment. You're hatching life. So, you know, right. You want to make sure you're going to have something that's reliable, that's going to work well, that's going to do the things you need it to do.
That reminds me of something else. Have a backup power source if you are going to be hatching eggs, because if you lose power, that's a problem.
You're in trouble. Yep. So look through all these different things. The one thing we can tell you is you really can't go wrong with Brinzy. Brinzy is a really good brand.
And I think we can agree that the three that we would recommend without hesitation for the hobbyist are the Brinzy Mini and Maxi incubators, the Producer's Pride incubator, and the Harris Farms incubator.
Right. They're reputable companies. And Brinzy, that's what they do. look at it this way. If this is something that you're going to want to do time and time again, put the money up first, because you're going to waste the money on the cheap one. It's not going to last for you. Or if you decide you do it and you're like, this isn't for me, if you have a higher quality one, you can resell it for almost what you paid for it. So if you have any other questions, reach out to us. We have no problem answering any questions for you.
We purposely steered away from the bigger incubators that breeders would be using simply because we don't have experience with them.
Right. And usually, like you said, it's the hobbyist. My personal thing is be very careful, because this is life. It's not just an experiment. There's a little living chicken in there. So just be really careful. Do your research. Okay. So should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we're doing one of the most beloved breeds out there, the Silky
2.0. Can't wait.
We have a fantastic interview for you with Sally Coulthard, best-selling author. She has a new book out called Foul Play. It's about the history of the chicken. You don't want to miss this. Cracking the eggs, we're doing savory buckwheat crepes.
Yummy.
And retail therapy, we are doing vintage chicken napkin rings and napkin holders. You'd be surprised at how much there's out there.
And when you have your bestie over, you want to set the table to look nice.
It's true.
Okay, so what should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens.
Every day, and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening. Ha ha ha.